Today is January 27th, 2019. I almost got the year wrong. This is Mobile Views Podcast 285. I'm Todd Agassiz, my good friend John Westfall. And if you hear a noise, it's because I'm in an open window environment, and it's pretty windy here today. It's gusting. Not super windy, not like gale force, but, you know, windy.
I am in a environment that will be rapidly changing over the next 24 hours.
Oh, yeah?
Right now, where I am at in Mississippi, it is 55 degrees. It feels like 55 mm-hmm. degrees. Mm-hmm. By, let's see, tomorrow, so Monday afternoon at 50, mm-hmm. at 2 o'clock, it should be 57, 4 o'clock, 60. So basically, we stay this way until mm-hmm. 8 o'clock, 49 degrees, 10 o'clock, 42 degrees.
No, start dropping.
12 a.m., 35 degrees, 2 a.m., 31 degrees, 4 a.m., 27, and 6 a.m., 24.
Wow.
So we get to drop about 30 degrees in a 12-hour period if the weather forecast remains unchanged. So that's going to be an interesting experience.
Well, let's
see. Not one that Southerners like very much.
I can imagine. here in Hawaii, people got all excited that we might have a cold front that might drop temperatures down to the low 60s. And you would not believe the panic that ensued. But to make you feel better, I'm just looking at my old hometown. And let's see. They're saying the high today, Sunday, is going to be about 21 degrees. The low on next week, Saturday, it's going to snow on Tuesday, and the low on Saturday is going to be low on Friday, it's going to be minus 23.
Ugh.
So
that is uncomfortably cold.
Yeah, almost a 40-degree shift in a week. Of course, you know, the highs and lows every day pretty wide.
Yeah, I find it interesting just the way people get so adapted to weather, but
yeah.
Even the most sane person, I think, would say that living in a place where the weather prevents you from doing things that you need to do, like, you know, getting out in an emergency, that sort of thing, that's pretty annoying. And so I'll take cold because that typically doesn't mess with us too much, but snow is what I'm glad to avoid.
Snow and extremely hard ice, packed snow that becomes hard.
Yes.
I steal hard ice. Having had to shovel that stuff as a kid, I'd prefer not to do that again.
Ever.
Ever. All right, on to, maybe not happier topics, but a follow-up to my last week's rant about online support for cloud services. So right after our podcast, which was on a Sunday, I think it was on a Sunday, I said, oh, what the heck, I will call them anyway. Call them, being Microsoft support, to see if I could find anybody. And you know what? Somebody answered a phone. An actual human being answered a phone after I went through a phone tree for a bit. I got transferred over to like an accounts person versus, you know, technical service support, mm-hmm. which is fine. You know, I'm okay with that. After about 30 minutes, mostly of hanging around waiting online, they actually did resolve it. And I got to change my credit card number, which I had to give up because of, you know, possible fraud activity a while back last year, and mm-hmm. merge it with a good card, which was already on file for my Office 365 subscription. So I got the Outlook.com premium service support out of the way now. How long that service continues to run still remains a problem. And I've got a couple of email addresses going there, so I guess I need to start thinking about that one of these days.
Yeah, it might even be worth a cheap web hosting account just to get catch-all email forwarding or something like that, just so that you've got something fairly reliable to get your email where it needs to go.
Yeah.
But,
and in fact, I've even got one email, a completely different email story, that used to be handled by, well, let me rephrase it. So I have a DreamHost account, but the domain name is managed by a different company. And that had not been a problem for many years. And all of a sudden last summer, my email stopped working. And when I did some investigation, it turned out the MX record had been, you know, no longer pointed at the right place, even though it had for many years. So I'm not sure what the deal is. I contacted DreamHost support, and they're pretty reasonable. But I still, you know, after 6 months, I still haven't gone back in and tried for a fourth time to modify the MX records to point to the right place. And, you know, I mean, it's more than the MX record, right? It's a whole bunch of stuff. And I can get in by using an IP address in a webmail interface, but it's not a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's not not that great of a compromise.
No. Okay. Moving on to rumors, and they are just rumors. So I read a couple of sites, rumors that there might be an iPad Mini 5 and an AirPod 2, but not much details about what's in them.
I think the AirPod 2 is a pretty sure thing at some point.
I hope so.
Because, you know, I really enjoy my AirPod, so I'm looking forward to the idea of some additional features, perhaps.
Yeah.
The iPad Mini 5 seems more and more likely now that we keep hearing about it, but I have a bad feeling it's going to be a very budget-tailored iPad.
No.
Not a, you know, sort of the sort of thing where it's a good entry-level iPad, it's a good iPad to buy for a casual user, but... Yeah. For people like you and I that sort of spend a good chunk of our day on iPad Pros and using Apple Pencils and things like that, I just don't think they're going to go for it. So it's a shame because I would really like an iPad Mini 5 in theory. I mean, I have a very expensive iPad Pro that I just bought, so I'm not really eager to give that up. But for something that would be like a little slate that I could just pull out and write on with an Apple Pencil.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
That'd be a very compelling argument for me. Yeah. That would probably be the only way I would consider an iPad Mini 5 if it came with Apple Pencil support.
Well, I still use an iPad 4, iPad Mini 4, several times a week. I carry it with me every day, everywhere I go, just in case I need it. It's always, you know, charged and updated and all that good stuff. And I would consider getting one just to, well, for two reasons. One, just to get, you know, something physically newer, even if it's not dramatically different. Because the iPad Mini 4 came out a couple of years ago now, right? Like 3-4 years ago. Basically, it's an iPad 3 in processing power. Maybe it's less than iPad Air. So, you know, it's not sluggish or anything, but, you know, it's time is getting near where it won't get updates and things. And two, as you know, John, it is one of the two devices I have kept on iOS 10 so I can continue to play Civilization Revolution.
Yes.
So it would be nice to have
priorities on this podcast.
Yeah. It's also the same reason I have two iPad Pros. So I wouldn't mind having an iPad Mini 5 just to have something running the current version of iOS. And we'll get to a rant about the current version of iOS later on. Soon. So... I guess I could mention that now before we go back to the rumors. So I was reading in a couple of Forbes actually. I was reading in Forbes that the latest update to iOS, what is it, 12.1.3, I think, is problematic. I mean, it's for some people it's turning off cellular data. Yeah, 12.1.3. And for other people, it's turning off Wi-Fi.
So, interesting.
Yeah.
I have not updated my iPad Pro to 12.3.1. I updated my iPhone yesterday. So, yeah. I don't know. I might give it
a couple
more days on the iPad Pro. Yeah, I have not had any problems with the iPhone.
Okay. I haven't updated my iPhone because, you know, there's been other problems, right, with the update. See, I'm on 12.1.1 on my iPhone. So, I'm two minor revs behind right now. And I've been holding off because 12.1.2 also had a problem with turning off, I think, cell data. So, but you know, the problem is if you lose Wi-Fi, can you still plug it into iTunes and update it that way? I'm not even sure.
Yes, I think you still can.
Okay.
Yeah, I know you can.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of people don't have iTunes.
That's true.
On anything, like my wife, for example. You know, she really doesn't use a desktop or notebook computer of any kind anymore. Well, that's not true. She has one for work, but, you know, I'm at home for a phone. Okay. So that wasn't actually a show notes, but I just saw it before we started this and thought I'd mention it. Okay, so not much in the way of what's going to be an iPad Mini 5. Nobody's talking about pencil support for the Mini 5, which is very disappointing.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But like I said, you know, just to have a modern OS on my iPad, I'll probably buy one if it's not super expensive. AirPod 2. So the only rumors I've heard are wireless charging case, touchless Siri, and possibly some biometric stuff like heart rate or something. Have you heard anything else?
Yeah, that's about what I've heard. I would like some more gesture support. So instead of just double tap, single tap, double tap, you know, triple tap, something like that would be nice, because right now it's real hard to determine what you want that double tap to be. A lot of times I'm torn between leaving it at Siri or moving it to play pause. And yes, I know you can remap different ears to be different things, but I don't always wear both ears. So it really would not be useful to me to.
Why don't you always wear both AirPods?
Probably the majority of the time I actually don't wear both. And it's usually because I'm either sitting in my office listening to, to a podcast or something, and I want to keep one ear open in case someone is coming or calls my name or knocks at my door. Or I'm walking around campus and I want to keep one ear open in case someone calls at me, you know, across the way or something that recognizes me. The only time I'll usually put two in is occasionally if I really want to block out the world, even if I am walking around campus or walking around town, I'll put both in. Or if I'm at home and I can use both without a problem. Although I also have my Beats Solo 3s that I use at home more than my AirPods.
I thought the AirPods have a mode where you can have like a pass-through sound mode where you're both listening to something and you have access to ambient sound around you, no?
That's a good question. They may have that. I've just never found it.
Okay.
So that is an interesting... I know there is a way with accessibility that people have used their AirPods...
Oh, for hearing aid.
Yeah, as a hearing aid, or basically to listen in on conversations. So that, the fun thing is leave your phone in a room and walk out with your AirPods, and then you can listen to whatever's going on in that room through your phone.
Well, that's funny. I never thought of that.
That's an interesting way to use it. But that's pretty stealthy. Yeah, I don't know if there's any way to have both pass-through
and sound playing. Like
I mean, I guess that would simply just be keep the volume low.
Okay, I'm hearing clicking on your side. Are you playing in a lock?
No, a pair of pliers.
Okay. okay, so the other thing, well, not other thing I've heard, the other thing I was hoping for in the new AirPods, oh, also, I think a greater waterproofness, well, you know, more greater water resistance, or whatever you want to call it. I've heard that's the other thing that may happen. The one I have not heard anything about, but I wish would, it'd be nice if it did body temperature. You know, it's in your ear, you should be able to guesstimate body temperature based on your ear temperature, you know, in an enclosed area. It'd be kind of interesting.
That would be.
Yeah. Okay. Next on. I read this in 9to5 Google just the other day. And that I didn't realize this was available. So Chrome OS, and you know, I use a Chromebook quite often, like every day. Chrome OS has something called Instant Tethering, which works with, up to now, only Pixel phones. And what that means is if you are not connected to Wi-Fi, your Chromebook will instantly tether automatically with, I guess you have to turn it on, but I mean, once you turn it on, it'll tether automatically with your phone to get data, which is kind of neat because, you know, that was the reason you got the iPad Pro at LTE, as I recall, because it was not convenient to, you know, sort of tether, manually tether, and then go on to whatever you're doing. So that is going to be available for non-Pixel devices, or is already arriving on some non-Pixel devices. So if you've got a Chromebook that you take around in the world with you, and it doesn't have LTE, like mine does not, I have a Samsung Chromebook Plus, and you have a Pixel phone, or you know one of the now-supported phones for this feature, you might want to check it out. It's called Instant Tethering.
So and I'll point out that this is Google replicating something that you and I both had in 2005. Because on a Pocket PC, you could enable dial-up networking, Bluetooth dial-up networking.
I forgot about that.
With another Pocket PC. So you could have, I at one point would have one device like the HTC Universal that I might be using for email and web browsing, but I might have another Pocket PC phone or a smartphone, a Microsoft smartphone in my pocket. And it would, when it detected that you were requesting internet, it would create the dial-up connection to the other device and authenticate and all that without any reaching around. That was something that annoyed me to no end when that went away. And kudos to Google for, after 10 plus years, bringing back that technology in some way. I wish Apple would do something like that with iOS, an automatic tether option at least.
Yeah. Okay. Next up, Oh, you've got a couple of things next up.
I do.
Yeah.
So, I did a little bit of Python programming this week. Hmm. And I know you are a fan of Python.
I am.
This was the first time I have ever programmed in Python.
Yeah.
But I figured everyone talks about how simple it is, so how hard can it be?
Yeah.
And I was right. I got up and running with it in a half a day and wrote the little app that I needed to write. So here's the situation that we are in. A couple of collaborators and I, we've been trying to hire a programmer to write a web application to do something.
Okay.
And the programmers that we get, they just, because it's almost too simple of an idea, they overthink it, then they burn out, and then they don't turn anything because they they waste the time and effort because, you know, they built out all the things that you're supposed to do these days with modern web app architecture. They had their models and their views and their controllers and their helpers and everything else. And it was just like, no, this is a very simple idea. The idea at its core is an adaptive questionnaire.
So, you know,
what you answer to one question provides the choices for the next question, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's really hard for someone who doesn't have a psychology background to wrap their heads around sometimes, you know, because they just sort of think about, well, but what do you mean not all the questions are going to be the same? And, you know, it's like, So I was on the phone with some collaborators. I said, you know, maybe we should explore doing like the back end processing and something else and just embedding it into a survey system.
Yeah.
And someone said, yeah, you probably do that in Python. And I thought, yeah, you probably could. And so I went home and I wrote up a little command line Python script that basically would show, at the very least, it's what we're going to use with programmers in the future that we hire, because it shows them, if you were to run this, it would ask you this question, it would then follow this path, it would then ask you that question, in a very simple and easy way for a programmer to understand.
So they have an actual use case, a functional use case to model after.
And what we may end up doing, my next step, so now this thing lives as a command line Python script. I do have a tutorial bookmark to turn it into a web API. That would just export the data it needs to export in JSON or something like that. So that, because if we can't find a programmer, that might be what I just do with it. It's actually working pretty well right now. I might just create a JSON API with it and pipe it into where it needs to go using JavaScript.
Isn't that such a common story? I mean, you know, I've been telling stories similar to that for literally decades now, where I needed to do something, nobody could or would help me, and I just said, oh, screw it, I'll do it myself.
Well, that's the problem that I have. My day job is not doing this sort of stuff anymore. It was when I, you know,
in your younger
days. Years ago.
Yeah,
it was my day job when I was a postdoc to kind of come up with these ideas. But, you know, today I don't have a lot of time to sit down and pound out a script and test it out and get it working. But this was a pleasant surprise how fast I was able to get it up and running.
Python is an amazing language. It just is. It does so many things right, like no semicolons, you know? You know, structure is demanded, not...
semicolons were just... It was weird not to have them.
Yeah.
I will say that that threw me off quite a bit.
Or the fact that indentation defines your structure, not the other way around.
Yes.
You know? So if you've got your indentation wrong, you've got your structure wrong. It's pretty darn obvious. You know, I actually, not that he would remember, but I actually met the inventor of Python. I probably pronounced his name wrong, but Guido von Rossum, many, many years ago at a conference. And I just went up to him and said, hey, thanks, you don't know me, but, you know, it's a wonderful language and thanks for inventing it, you know, that kind of thing. A really nice guy and a really, really language.
There were a lot of languages like that around the time Python was created, around the time PHP was originally created. A lot of these... simplify it way down and just make it functional languages. And I think PHP has perhaps grown a bit too complex for its own good. But Python seems to still be at that stage where you can just write it and it just works.
The problem with PHP is that at some point, if you are not a disciplined programmer, it is unreadable. It's almost like not as bad as Perl, which is a wonderful language, but can be difficult to read. But it, you know, it can get to that point where, what the heck?
You know? Yeah, yeah, that's how I felt with modern frameworks for PHP, because I've got every programmer I bring in, I say, well, you know, we wrote these things. These original PHP scripts were written 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago. They're all just straight scripts. They might use includes here and there, but they're nothing fancy.
Yeah.
And they go, well, can we use a framework?
Yeah.
And it makes me think that there are no PHP programmers left out there that don't use frameworks. And I said, well, yeah, sure. I guess you can use a framework if you want to. And then they spin their wheels for 3 months on a framework. not really knowing, and I get these updates. They're like, I just put a new item board on Trello. Can you go take a look at it? And it's like, yeah, but I wrote a spec that told you exactly what I needed. And, just follow that.
Yeah.
And we'll all be good. And, maybe
I have had that problem. Yeah.
And this week in replicating in a 30-line Python script.
Yeah.
Everything that I would need to show off to a programmer, it really reminded me that, A, my true calling is on the back end. My design skills are not that great, but I can at least program APIs and such. And B, programming has become a weird world for guys like you and I, where we look at it and go, I'm not quite sure why we've made this so complex.
Yeah. Not everything needs an MVC framework.
Yes, exactly. Not everything.
Yeah. I mean, sure, it looks fancier and you feel like, you can get more billable hours, but I don't know. Sometimes a program is just a program. It's not a whole framework.
Yeah. Yes, that's true.
All righty. Let's see. What else you got? Oh, you got an app. App review.
Yeah. So I downloaded an app this week, and mostly because
I'm looking at it.
Was just curious if it was as useful as it says. It's called Just Press Record.
Okay.
Just Press Record. It's the name of the app. It's $4.99. Uh-huh. A little on the pricier side for apps.
Yeah.
But I'll be whatevered, darned, or a stronger language, whatever you want to use.
Uh-huh.
It does exactly what it says. You open it on your Apple Watch, and it immediately starts recording. You don't have to hit like a set. So that was what I was sort of thinking, was I want to have a complication on my watch where as soon as I tap the button, it just starts recording. I don't have to then go to another app and choose start record or go to another app and choose some settings. And so it's very refreshing to actually have an app that does exactly what it says. Just press record. All you do is press the complication from your watch face.
Mm-hmm.
It opens the app, goes straight into recording. Saves all of your recordings in iCloud. You can easily delete them, export them, move them. I was quite impressed and felt that it was a worthwhile $4.99 for those times when you're in a meeting and you just want to make sure that you know exactly what was said, or you want to give a voice note that it does support transcription, so it'll automatically transcribe in the background for you.
How good is the speech to text transcription?
I've played around with it a little bit. It's been decent.
Yeah.
It's about the same as any other speech to text I've seen.
So is it usable? I mean, obviously, we're not looking for perfection here, but when you read it, you go, I need to edit this so it makes sense. But I know.
Yeah, I think it's usable.
Hmm.
So it's one of those apps that I know Apple has spotlighted a few times on the Apple Watch App Store. But my thought, so all the other apps I've ever explored like this, you hit the complication, then it brings up another screen where it actually loads the app, and on that screen is a big record button, and you hit that record button, and it's still a double tap sort of process.
That's pretty cool.
What was very refreshing was seeing it immediately open the app and immediately start recording.
Now, I know it says you can record to the watch. So when you press your watch button, does it record into your watch, or can you say, hey, I've got my phone with me? The option is, I've always got my phone with me, record to my phone, because I've got limited memory on my watch.
Well, I believe the, I don't know if it can go straight to the phone, but it does go to iCloud, so that's where you can keep it.
Okay, so maybe it doesn't store anything on the phone. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Because, over the years, I've bought a bunch of recording apps, but mostly they were recording and synchronized to writing of some kind. Audio Note comes to mind, which worked actually pretty well. So the way Audio Note works is you turn on record and you write your notes, you type your notes, and it's recording audio, and it synchronized what the sounds it hears you know, words or otherwise, with the point in time at which you wrote the text. And if you're not writing text, it just kind of goes on its merry way recording, but it works best if you keep typing. This one doesn't have the typing thing, but if it does transcription, boy, that solves a lot of problems. I'm buying this right now. It just cost me $4.99 plus excise tax.
Also include the idea that if you keep it as a complication on your watch and you walk into a room and all of a sudden you're thinking, huh, I wish someone else was here to hear what this person's telling me.
Yeah.
it's very easy to subtly hit the complication and let it start recording. So if you worry that later what was said might be taken out of context or changed or someone say, oh, I never told you to do that. This is one way to have those recordings. Provided you are in a state that is a one-party state for recording. Wow,
and it's pretty small, too, because I hit by, and I've got a reasonably good broadband connection, but that was really fast. And it's got 4.4 stars out of 5 with 674 ratings, so people seem to like it.
Who knew that these things that Apple features are actually decent apps? You know? Like I said, I've seen this app for a while, and I thought, maybe not. But what really sold me on it was that it does exactly what it says from the home screen, you know. Hmm. And of course, actually, if you open the app through the Apple or through the Launchpad in Apple Watch, you know, it won't auto start recording from there. You know, so if you're going in and you want to review a previous recording, you don't have to worry about it auto starting. But if it comes off the complication off your watch face, it immediately starts recording.
Hmm, that is cool. Okay, I am now the proud owner of this $4.99 app, and I guess you have to tell people when you're recording them, but that doesn't seem like a big problem.
Depends on your state.
Yeah.
Some states are two-party states, some are one-party states.
Yeah, and I don't mean on a phone, I mean just in general, you know, when you're like in a meeting or something. I usually let people know when I'm recording, just to be polite. Okay. I'm just kind of looking. You know, I have not looked at the App Store's recommended apps in a long time.
it's interesting for Apple Watch how over the years the Apple Watch App Store or the subsection of the regular App Store devoted to Apple Watch, there are a lot of interesting sorts of new and unique things on there.
Yeah.
So I definitely, if you have an Apple Watch and it feels like it's gotten a little stale over time, go look and see if there's maybe something that... you might want to look. I mean, there's the Pillow Sleep Tracker app. I've used that in the past. I started using it again recently. Of course, then it becomes the issue of, well, when do you charge your Apple Watch if you're sleeping with it on?
Right. And what is the answer to that?
In my case, my wife has an old Apple Watch that she's not using, so I've now started using that as my night Apple Watch.
You know, that's... I think that kind of defines the word decadent, but okay.
I know. Well, I had a Series Zero that I was using for a while, and then it had the battery swelling issue.
Oh.
And so I started to notice that the screen was starting to pop on it, and so I put it in the Apple, not graveyard, but, you know, museum over here of things that I keep since it's a first-gen Apple Watch. But hers is not having that issue, and so I've started using that at night. But yeah, there's some cool stuff that you can have on your Apple Watch.
By the way, speaking of swollen batteries, I think I mentioned this a while back, but my Surface Pro 4 ran into that problem a month ago. And so it hit its battery was slowly getting worse. It had slowly retaining less and less of a charge. So for example, if I shut off the device, not sleep it, but if I shut off the device before, you know, leaving the office, and I come back next morning, it'd be like 10% battery left, having been charged, you know, charged fully before I went home and unplugged it. And then one day, it simply wouldn't charge at all, just stopped charging. So, you know, fortunately, Microsoft, even though it was out of warranty, I think, Microsoft did the exchange for it. Where it was on an enterprise account, it's not a personal purchase. So I got a replacement Surface Pro 4, whose battery seems to work just fine. So that I also rented it, this whole swollen battery thing.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, you've got another couple of things.
Well, and one other quick thing. So I did mention back in, podcast 282. So that was right after Christmas that I was trying this It's called basically a pixel a day, and if you're doing bullet journal, it's a little dot that you do, but if you're on a electronic device, you actually have to use something. So I created I found an Excel spreadsheet that does it, and I automated the whole process, so every night at 9 o'clock, it tells me I need to go do this, and it's actually been pretty reliable. I've been pretty happy with the way that Siri shortcuts, reminders work, and I've stuck with it now for 26 days, and so I'm hopeful that I will actually make my New Year's resolution and actually keep tracking just a daily rating of 1 to 5. How was today?
Have you seen any?
Get a nice little thought at the end.
Just looking at it, even now with only 27th, with only 26 pixels, I guess. Have you noticed any trends? I think you said it was in color, right?
Yeah, I haven't noticed too many trends yet. Although I also am still trying to figure out what I consider a 5-day, a 4-day, a 3-day, a 2-day, and a 1-day. I haven't used any 2s or 1s lately because I don't know if 1 is just, should the extremes of the scale be used for exceedingly great and exceedingly horrible things?
Yeah.
Should I be trying to think of every day truly as 3 is the average day and 4 is a slightly better than average and 5 is an exceptionally better. So I think I'm still in the calibration period. I haven't quite figured out what that's going to look like for sure yet.
Yeah, that's the problem with subjective scales, right? I mean, what is it you're really measuring or recording?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Like I stubbed my toe and it really hurts. Is that a 1? Right, there are worse things than stubbing your toe and hurting it, right?
Yes, there definitely are.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at right now. I had a pretty good day yesterday. Yesterday was the first day that I actually put a 5 down.
Wow.
Because it was just a fun day, hanging out with friends and doing things and meeting up with people and that sort of thing. But, I could see for someone who's not extroverted in any way, yesterday would have been a 2 or a 1. Yeah.
Let's say you won like some kind of, we don't have a lottery in Hawaii, but I don't know if you do in your state, but let's say you won a megabucks lottery, right? Would that be a 5-day?
Yeah, I would consider that 5.
And would that be just as good as yesterday?
Well, you see, that's the problem.
Right.
Do I withhold these 5s or do I, on that day when I win that lottery, make it a 6?
Yeah.
A previously unknown level of
death. Well, I'm sure you'll figure it out. Knowing you, you'll probably have a whole set of rules to determine a 5-point scale in a couple of weeks. But, that's sort of interesting. I've been considering that myself. I thought it'd be interesting to see what the graphics look like, in terms of trends or just aesthetics. Is that a pretty graph after, say 100 dots have been filled in or however it's presented? Okay, and you also have something about your iPad with cellular data?
Oh, just that I said a couple of episodes ago I was curious how, mm-hmm. if I would enjoy using it still or if I would find it to be too... Not too expensive for what it was worth. And I actually have found that it's pretty nice to have an iPad with cellular. I've been pleasantly surprised at times when I wouldn't have had the ability to do something. It's nice to have it. So if anyone's also in the same place that I am where they're thinking, do you really want it? Do I want to pay the extra? If it's not that much, I say go for it. I've enjoyed having cellular on my iPad.
To finish off, it was actually a topic I almost was going to add to the show notes and I forgot to. And that's something you reminded me of with Just Press Record, and that is super useful single function apps.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be pretty common when the iPhone App Store first emerged. There are some really I think level meters are really popular for a while, as you might recall. And a couple of apps I got recently, like in the last couple of months, isn't recently, that I found kind of interesting. One is called DB Meter, as in, audio mm-hmm. volume. And I don't know why, I just find it fascinating to monitor world, probably because I really want a tricorder. but, it'll measure sound levels. So right now, let's see, I'm being quiet because I'm measuring DB. So when I'm not talking, it's about 25 dB, which is pretty darn quiet. There's no car sounds here, there's... couple of birds in the distance. I think there's water dripping somewhere because it was raining a bit earlier. But it's very quiet, and if somebody's got a, like if you're walking to work and the maintenance crew or have leaf blowers in full tilt. You know, how loud is that? I forget. It was pretty loud, by the way. It's like 90 to 100 dB or something like that from the distance I was at. But it's kind of fun to look at. You know, I've always found it fun to measure the world. I also got this app called Color Query Pro because I think it was free that day. And you point your camera at something and it'll give you the palette, you know, numerical palette values in RGB or hex or CMYK or a couple other things so that you can duplicate the color. I've actually found that useful because, as you know, my Doodle a Day project, sometimes I'm wondering, what color is that thing? And I can just, you know, point my phone at it and go, oh, that's, you know, whatever in an RGB scale and replicate the color in the paint palette. So it's kind of fun. And now I've added just press record to my list of more or less single function apps that I find pretty useful. The other one that's, let's see if I can find it. Where did I put it under? I think it's called Guitar Tuna, as in fish, T-U-N-A. Mm-hmm. And it helps you tune your guitar and does a pretty good job at it too. Oh, yeah, here it is. Yeah, Guitar Tuna. So you can, I think you can tune things other than guitars too, like, let's see, standard tuning, ukulele, and bass. So, and you can also do custom tuning. But yeah, so it's kind of fun. That's all it does, is tune guitar, and it's pretty darn accurate and saves you the trouble of buying one for a couple of bucks to attach to your guitar. Okay, and with that, I think we have spent just under 40 minutes. Once again, even though I said we had nothing to talk about when I asked you if you wanted to do a podcast today, yesterday was a bit crazy. I was supposed to do a podcast with Jay last night, but I don't know. My schedule just whacked out last night, yesterday, the whole day, so that didn't work out. Sorry about that, Jay. We'll talk to Jay later about comics. We've got a lot to talk about there. Oh, I did want to mention CBS All Access. You know, we talked about it last year. I subscribed to it last week. I think I mentioned last week. I have to admit, having said a lot of bad things about Star Trek Discovery, the first season wasn't too bad. I mean, there are some things that you went, what? And also some issues with continuity, in my opinion. But I finally got to season 2, where Captain Christopher Pike appears. So I'm kind of glad I paid for it, I guess. I'm not regretting it. I'm not regretting it. But I'm having too many subscriptions. Too many subscriptions. I think I've now got 5 content subscriptions. Yeah, 5. For
video. Yeah, I'm probably around there as well. And I thought about what I might want to cut at some point in the future.
And, you know, next year Disney's going to appear. And for folks who say, well, you know, my kids are grown up, I don't really watch Disney anymore, maybe not, because that includes Marvel and all kinds of stuff. Fox, Star Wars, right? That whole stuff will be in. So those of you who are fans of that stuff, you may be in the conundrum that I'm in. Is, oh my gosh, do I have to add a 6th video content subscription to my list? But we'll deal with that sometime later this year when that launches. Okay, John, thanks for helping out with 285. This one's in the can. Talk to you later.